ॐ ज्ञानतिमिरन्नस्य ज्ञानञ्जनाशलाकाया चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः.
And thank you to everyone who's joined us online from various places around the world to listen in. There are a lot of choices to tune into, so we do appreciate you tuning in here at ISV. And today we have an opportunity together to follow the exact process that's been prescribed by previous teachers for attaining a closer relationship with Krishna. Before we proceed with the program today, I offer my respectful obeisances to the founder Acharya of this International Society for Krishna Consciousness, His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. And to all of you, because you are all Vaishnavas, and therefore you are the most worshipable in the three worlds. Krishna has a relationship with every living entity. As is mentioned in the Sri Brahma Samhita, Sanitya Nitya Sambandha Prakritischa Parayivasa, that the living entity is eternally related to the Lord in divine kinship. We have an intimate, loving relationship with the Lord. However, as we can see from our experience in this material world, it's possible for that relationship to be suppressed to varying degrees. However, it doesn't mean there isn't a relationship. And the definition of Krishna consciousness is the full-blown awareness of our relationship with Krishna. Krishna is always aware of his relationship with us, as he's aware of everything. He says in the Bhagavad Gita, Vedaham samatitani vartamanani charjana bhavishani chabhutani mam tu vedana kashchana. He says, I know every living entity. In fact, he knows everything at once, the meaning of omniscient. However, living entities know him only as much as he allows them to know him, and that's based on relationship. The Upanishads also say, Nayamatma pravachanena labhyona medayana bahuna shrutena yami vaisha vinutetena labhyas tashyaisha esha vravinutetanam swam, which means that one cannot know Krishna simply by being very intelligent, by being very expert at speaking, or hearing expert speeches. However, Krishna, when he chooses, reveals himself to devotees according to their mood of love and surrender towards him. This is what he says in the Bhagavad Gita. Ye yata mam prapadyante tamstataiva bhajamyaham manavart manavartante manusha parta sarvashaha. And that is, that all living entities are actually following his path. And as a soul avails himself to Krishna, cooperates with him and surrenders to him, Krishna accordingly reveals himself. Therefore, the process of Krishna consciousness is the most progressive of all paths, because it means to come to reality and understand our real relationship with Krishna. And this is the definition given in the Srimad Bhagavatam, the quintessential literature on bhakti, that the highest truth is reality distinguished from illusion for the benefit of all. And therefore, as one goes into the process of Krishna consciousness and is able to distinguish what is reality and what is illusion, and is able to apply oneself practically in the process of Krishna consciousness, then one can perceive Krishna to a greater degree. And this is the source of actual happiness for everyone. To the degree that my relationship with Krishna is obscured to that degree, I feel restricted in my existence. So, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Maya tatam idam sarvam jagaravyakta murtina matstani sarvabhutani. Sarvabhutani matstani ti upadharaya means that he's everywhere at once, he is everything, at the same time he has his independent personality. This is the great mystic potency of Krishna. Although he's everything at once, he also has a divine individual personality. And the goal of bhakti yoga is to understand the personality of God. We call him the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And as I mentioned earlier, every living entity has some relationship with Krishna because we are parts and parcel of Krishna. It's not that we ever, at any time, don't have a relationship with him. But in lower stages of consciousness, my relationship may be partial, or my realization of my relationship may be partial, or fragmented. So, as an example, in the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, the personified Vedas say there are various stages of realization of Krishna. In the lowest stage, we have what's called Annamoy. And the other day when I was in my backyard looking out at some of the trees nearby, they're doing quite well because of so much rain. I noticed that there are a lot of living entities like birds. Hopefully Shweka is not here. I mentioned birds. And they're mainly concerned with eating. They do have a lot to choose from, especially during certain seasons around my house. During one season, usually in the autumn time, or consistently within the autumn time, the crows can come and eat persimmons. They do share with others, like the squirrels. But in the summertime, late summer, they get plums. And whether they're aware or not aware, these are being provided by Krishna. And in Annamoy, the relationship that the living entities have, like the birds, we'll just speak about the crows for a minute, they're eating various types of fruits and enjoying them. And that's sustaining them. And this is their relationship with Krishna, at least the extent of it that they have in that particular body. Srila Prabhupada mentions in the Adi Lila of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, in the 4th chapter, 34th verse, that every living being, according to the body that it receives, has an appreciating capacity of the Lord. So if one were to receive the body of a crow, as an example, one would be limited in one's ability to perceive the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The extent of it might be Annamoy. That is, I can only taste the Lord and appreciate the fact that I'm getting nice fruits. Of course, I don't even know if they're expressing appreciation, because gratitude is a very high sentiment. But definitely the relationship is there, that they're eating, and that's their connection, Krishna sustaining them. And if one were to think about it, this is actually an amazing feat, that the Lord is feeding everybody, all living entities at once. If you have somebody come to your house, it takes a lot of preparation. You have to think about it for a week, what they're going to eat, what kind of things they like. And then there's a lot of activity in your home before they actually show up, right? Yes. You have to go to the store, you have to buy certain things, and what to speak of cooking, getting the place ready so it looks like you're really organized. And then when they come, you have to think carefully where they're going to sit and how you're going to feed them. And this takes a lot of consideration just for us to feed a few people. Now, Krishna is described in the Vedas as being the one who feeds everyone. Nityo nityanam chetanas chetananam eko bahunam yo vidatati kaman. In fact, he's fulfilling the desires of every living entity. One of the main desires that every living entity has is to eat. Especially animals, that's the main thing on their mind, is where am I going to eat and what looks good. This is Anamoy. But think about how Krishna arranges for every living entity to eat. As Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, the spiritual master of my spiritual master, used to point out that the elephants in the forest eat tons of food every day. They drink a lot of water too. Many, many gallons. Are you all drinking enough water? If you drank as much as an elephant, you would expire. You can die by drinking too much water. So there's water and there's food, and they eat a lot of foliage. I met with the head elephant keeper when I was in Mayapur. I interviewed her. And I just thought it was going to be a short interview, but it was about 2 hours. I was interested in the elephants. I was planning on visiting them, but I didn't get a chance. In any case, she gave me a lifetime worth of information about elephants, how they think, but especially what they eat. And I was quite impressed at how much they eat. But I'd seen it before. Once in South India, I went with my good friend Tatvadarshan Prabhu when we were spending time there in the south, and we leased an elephant. I don't think it was from Hertz, but he did have a source down there, and it came with the elephant man. What are they called? It's not called the elephant man. That's another thing, like a movie. What? A huddy. Let's say huddy. That's easy for you to say. So the huddy came with the deal, and we had a big truck that the elephant would travel in. We'd go to villages and take the elephant through the villages. We'd have Harinam. And when you bring an elephant anywhere, people come to see it. So people come running from everywhere to see the elephant. We give out prasad, and we have Harinam, book distribution, and we'd camp out that night and show a movie, the Hare Krishna movie, and everyone would watch it. But I remember stopping along the way, and the huddy would stop the truck, we'd get out, and he had a machete, and he would cut down all kinds of foliage and throw it in the truck. And the elephant was eating all day long. Like celery, you know, big branches were like a piece of celery for us or something. So Srila Bhaktisiddhanta said, see how Krishna's feeding everybody. This is one way to notice the Lord. There's an arrangement. What is a persimmon anyway? It's a very tasty fruit. It has a delicate flavor and beautiful color. Aesthetically, you don't like to eat stuff that doesn't look good, right? It's a science how you serve food to others. Think of how Krishna's designed a persimmon. The color is practically indescribable. Only the persimmon has it. And then the flavor and the nourishment behind it and so forth. And that's been arranged. And it comes out at a certain time. Every living entity has its food all year long, one way or another, through the arrangement of Krishna, through nature. And that's Krishna's benevolence. He's unlimitedly benevolent and can do something about it. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Bhoktaram yagyatapasam sarvaloka maheshwaram suridam sarvabhutanam gyatva mam shantim richati. He said, think about who I am, what my position is. If you can realize several aspects of my personality, just by looking around the world and noticing how it is, your existential situation, then you'll have an inkling as to what my mood is, what I'm doing. So, Bhoktaram yagyatapasam. Krishna is the supreme enjoyer. He's one that can accept gifts from everybody, and he knows what to do with them. I don't always know what to do with gifts that are given to me. I wonder how to process them. A Christian never wonders. He has an unlimited appetite for us giving him things, which is nice. If you've ever given something to somebody and they either didn't take it or didn't appreciate it, it's a rather disappointing, isn't it? But Krishna's not like that. He can accept anything. That's why in the Bhagavad Gita, he says, yet koroshi arashnashi as johasi dadasi yet yat tapasyasi kontiya tat kurishva mararpanam. He says, if you want to develop your relationship with me, just start giving me things. I was like, well, what should I give him? Just give me whatever you have. That's what the verse means. Yet koroshi arashnashi as johasi dadasi yet. Whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you offer and give away, offer it back to me. As a sacred act, as from the heart, give it to me, and I'll accept it. Krishna can accept it. That's Bhuktaram. He can enjoy anything given by the living entity to him. So that's a big deal. And the fact is, he owns everything, owns and controls everything, and he's also the best friend. So we can see his personality in the world by noticing how he's feeding everyone, and the joy that living beings take in eating whatever they eat. And as we heard yesterday, he's not only the food, he provides it, and it's his energy, so in one sense it's him, in the spirit of the verse I said earlier, mayata tamidam sarvam. But at the same time, He's also the digestive force. He allows us to digest, which is a big deal, isn't it? I mean, to eat is one thing, but it's a whole process. Once you eat, it has to be digested. And it's a holistic process, really, when you eat. You have to appreciate what you're eating, otherwise it's really hard to eat it. And when you do eat it, it has to be digested. The digestion starts even when you're chewing. And then it goes into your stomach, and then there's what is called a fire of digestion in the Ayurveda. It describes how the fire of digestion is very important. And we heard yesterday from the 15th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita that Krishna is that fire of digestion within the stomach. So that's another way in which Krishna is present with all the living entities. And you'll notice how they eat, they're being supplied food, and then they're able to digest it. So that's a relationship, and Krishna has it with every living entity. How many living entities can you think of right now? Three? Ten. Which one? A lot? How many? Name one. Mongoose. A what? A giraffe. Yeah, I saw a giraffe. I went to Africa a few years ago. They took me to one of those natural preserves. I'd never seen one up close, maybe in a zoo, but seeing it in the wild is something else. And Krishna provided a long neck so the giraffe could feed on all kinds of stuff. And if you go through all the different species, we'd be here a long time. 8,400,000. Each one of them is being fed. And that's remarkable. And that's Krishna's prowess. And it's not a big deal for him. He can provide everything for the living entities perfectly so that they can eat. So that's Annamaya. That's a relationship that living entities have with Krishna. And then comes Pranamaya, which is the opening of the consciousness. So Krishna consciousness means to open your consciousness like a flower opening. So as we practice sadhana, which means there's a practice actually which is very natural, which is meant to awaken our appreciating capacity for the Lord. He's already there. He's already intimately connected with us in every way. He's supplying our life breath. And we can experience at some point as our consciousness opens that we're alive, that we have breath, we have consciousness coursing through our veins and so forth. And then there's Gyanamoy, where we start to be aware of thought processes through which we can organize ourselves. And Vijnanamoy, where we start to get philosophical realizations about the difference between the body and the soul. This is a very advanced position of life that Krishna describes in the Bhagavad Gita, where he says, Kshetrajnam chapimam vidhi sarva kshetrishu bharata kshetra kshetrajnayo jnanam yatach jnanam matam mama. And that is that when one comes to Vijnanamoy and has this realization that there's a difference between me and my body. I am a spiritual particle that is situated in the heart chakra. And from that particle, there's consciousness radiating throughout my body, and it extends itself through my energies in this world where I speak, I interact, I have relationships, and so forth. And that spark is actually maintaining this physical body. It animates it. And when that spark goes out of the body, then the body becomes inanimate again. Right now, it's just a group of chemicals that are held together by Krishna's arrangement. But after the spark leaves the body again disintegrates. It has no means by which to hold together. And it falls back into the various categories of energies in this world. So in the Sri Shapanishad, this is noted, Vayura Nilamamritam Atedam Bashmantam Sharinram Om Krato Smara Kritam Smara Krato Smara Kritam Smara. Let this temporary body be burnt to ashes and let the air of life be merged with the totality of air. Now, my Lord, please remember all my sacrifices, and because you are the ultimate beneficiary, please remember all that I've done for you. When the spiritual spark leaves this body, it is leaving behind a gift that was given as a vehicle. And in Vijnanamoy, one realizes to some degree that I'm not the body, I'm actually the soul within the body. And then there's the highest level, the full opening of the flower into Krishna consciousness, which is called Anandamoy. And this is the joy of realizing one's original relationship with Krishna, which somehow or other has become dormant. And we're in a situation now where we require a rescuing because the material energy is formidable. And when Krishna rescues us from the material world through various agents, it is considered by the personified Vedas to be the greatest of all his pastimes. So we get to be involved in that pastime, which means we get to be rescued from this world by Krishna, who takes great pleasure in bringing us out of the ignorance of the material world and back into the light of Krishna consciousness and our eternal relationship with him. And the sadhana that we practice, which means there's a means through which we help to open that flower of consciousness so that we can fully appreciate Krishna and our relationship with him, is something that is passed down through great teachers. The means by which one attains Krishna is described in three stages. The first stage is called sambandha. It means that one must realize that I have a relationship with Krishna. That's why I began by talking in very rudimentary terms about the way in which every living entity has a relationship to Krishna through eating. Just to emphasize the fact that we're never disconnected with him, even when our consciousness is restricted. Interestingly, and not to divert too much from the topic at hand, but there are various stages of consciousness mentioned in the Shastra, and you'll recognize these. Jagrata means when we're awake, and hopefully all of you are right now. And there's Supti, which means when you go to sleep and you dream at night. And then there's Susupti, which means when you're asleep but you're not dreaming. It's a very deep state of consciousness, and this is described in the Shvetashvatara Upanishad, quoted by Jiva Goswami in the Tattva Sandarbha. The Susupti sleep is actually mechanically described there, interestingly, in the Upanishads, that there are billions of nerve endings in your brain, and during Susupti sleep, they converge within one nerve, and the brain activity becomes subdued. Interestingly, in this Susupti state, which is also a state we are in if we don't happen to leave the material world before Mahavishnu, I know this is sounding a little esoteric, before he inhales, I better give some context to that. This is described in the Brahma Samhita, yashaika nishvasita kala matavalambya jivanti loma vilaja jagadandanata vishnur mahansa iha yasya kala vishesho govindamari purusham tamaham bhajami. And we're sitting here like, it seems like time is going on and we can think into the future. I'll probably live for another million years here in Silicon Valley or something like that. But actually, as geological time courses on and millions, billions of years go by, it's insignificant in the context of this cosmic manifestation because all of it, 311 trillion years worth, is taking place within the exhalation of the Mahavishnu, one of the expansions and the expansion of the expansion of Krishna. So when he exhales in his lila of creating the material world, we all come into this material world from the body of Mahavishnu. We're remanifested into the world. As Srimad Bhagavatam describes, Saugunamayer bhaver bhuta sukshmendriyatmabhi sa nirviteshu nirvishto bhute bhuteshu tat gunan. When we come back out from that state of being merged into Mahavishnu for millions and millions of years, then the Supersoul enters back within our heart and reminds us of our previous desires so that we can take them up again. Getting back to the point, while we're in the Mahavishnu, the living entities are merged along with all the material elements that are in a neutral stage. And we're in that state of Susupti, which means dreamless sleep. There's more description given of that state of Susupti, and that is that we have some proximity to the Supreme Personality of Godhead in that state. It's very much like the bliss of Brahmananda, or being identified with the impersonal Brahman energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In fact, it's mentioned in the Tattva Sandarbha that one of the reasons that we feel refreshed after coming back from that state is because of our proximity to the Supreme Lord. That makes sense, doesn't it? In fact, we really get our energy, as Balaram was pointing out in this last presentation. If you didn't see it live, you got to see it on the recorded material. The devotees here gave an excellent presentation on Panchratrik Vidhi. Anyways, mentioning the importance of the sun in our lives. And at night, you might notice that you get tired and you go to sleep, usually. It's kind of like, once the sun is gone, you just give up. Like, what's the use anymore? We do have electric lights now. It's an artificial standard. But once the sun, which is the main feature of this universe, darkens, we really just kind of give up. We get our energy from Krishna, from the sun. Everything we eat actually is transformed sun energy. And that's all Krishna. That's our relationship with him. He's sustaining us. He's there with us all the time. When we see the sun, we get happy. And when it goes away, when it's darkened, we We kind of give up and go to sleep. In our sleeping condition, in susupti, we have proximity to the super soul, and we get kind of enlivened. And when you wake up again, you feel like, okay, I'm refreshed. I can try again. Let me try again this day. The sun's out, and I can go for it again. And so this process of sambandha means to regain a knowledge of our relationship with Krishna. It's a bewildering state to be born in this world in the first place. Can I get a second on that?
Yes.
Okay. 50% of the audience agree. So, bewildering in the sense that I really don't know where I came from. Can I get a yes on that?
Yes.
And I really couldn't, if I were to write an essay about where I'm actually going to end up in the next life, I wouldn't have a clue. I couldn't be very precise about it, because it really is left up to somebody else. I don't have much to say about it, ultimately, where I'm going. So it's a little bit of a helpless situation. And sambandha, jnana means knowledge, of course. It's cognate with the word know in English. And the sambandha means my relationship. So one of the first stages of awakening our appreciating capacity and opening that flower of bhakti, of full love for Krishna, is in remembering our relationship with him. And the great teachers of bhakti have recommended that one should hear about that relationship every day, because we tend to get attracted to what we hear about. If I came in here and started telling you about the beautiful features of the Hawaiian Islands, which I won't, because I've been there many, many times and I actually don't really like it anymore. But so it's hard for me to put my heart into it. But I'll try anyway. Hawaii is around 72 degrees all year round. In the summer, I think it goes up to 74. That's pretty hot. And most days there are rainbows in every direction. And there's a nice breeze. If you live in certain places, the breeze comes to you, even to cool you down a little bit from the 74 degrees. And half the time you're in Hawaii, it rains just a little bit during the daytime. So you have a pleasant experience. And then the flowers, everywhere you go, there are flowers that are bringing you back to the heavenly scent of the island. What to speak of the beautiful ocean on all sides. Of course, I realized when I got there that there were ambulances going everywhere. It sort of broke the spell. And if I tell you about it, however, you're hearing a few things. I see a few smiles. You might at some point think, well, let me go there. Of course, anywhere we go in the material world, somebody tells you to go somewhere else. If you travel to Hawaii, you'll see some billboard there that says, you know, you really should try going to China. China Airlines has a deal. And the wandering mind says, oh, yeah, maybe I'll go to China. If you go to China, it says go to Korea. Korea says, hey, Australia's waiting for you. And it's a picture of kangaroo. And you might think, I haven't ever seen a kangaroo myself, so I should really go there. And, you know, inevitably when you get to Australia, you're going to find a billboard somewhere that says go to France, because that's the place where people really know the aesthetic of life. And there is no ultimate resting place here where we'll feel completely satisfied. And part of sambandha jnana is to hear about our real home. Home is something that is natural to us. In fact, when Apple came out with the iPhone 10, a lot of people were upset because they couldn't feel that home button anymore. I think they saved a little bit in the hardware by making it virtual, the virtual home button. I kind of like that other one. You could feel it, you know, under your thumb. But they took it out. We found it again, but we didn't feel right until we found it. And home means that I have this sense that that's where I belong. That's where I start all my activities from. The material world is described by Krishna as being the place where we're constantly traveling. You really can't stay in Silicon Valley because it's not our home. The word travel comes from the word travail. And I hate to break it to you, but the word travail is not a nice word. It comes from the origin of that word is an instrument of torture. There's a kind of a whip that has some, I don't know, some implements on the end that really inflict pain. Three, travail. So there's three kind of hard objects on the whip. Anyway, I don't want to go too much. It's Sunday. It's a family program. But that's the word travail, and that's where travel came from. It's not our nature to always be on the move and being moved along. It's unceremonious, the way in which I'm moved along. We don't like it. We don't like it when people that we're attached to get moved along without us, and we don't like it when we get moved along. And this is the stuff of sambandhagyan, understanding where we actually are. We're in a place where we can't stay. Now, a lot of people assume that we can stay because it just seems natural that we'd stay here, doesn't it? A lot of times American thinks, well, I'm American, so I'll do all American things. But Prabhupada would often point out that in the next life, you might not be an American. Of course, you could be an American, but you might not be in a human body. Which, if you're an animal that Americans like to eat, is not a good situation to be in. I mean, it sounds funny, but it's, again, unceremonious and actually precarious, the situation in the material world. We're teetering. That's a good word, teetering. Because, as the poet, who's the poet who described? Amala Jalada, Amala Kamala Jivana Talamala. Who said that? Govindadas. And Kamala Dala Jala Jivana Talamala. It describes in the beautiful poetical Bengali language the way I'm teetering in this world, which in this metaphor is like a drop of water on a lotus leaf. It slide off in any moment. It's part of sambandhagyan, which is a beginning process. One thing is to understand that this is not really my home. So don't really try to set up shop here very permanently. You can live in the world in a way in which you have your necessities fulfilled so that you can be sound in body and mind. But don't dig deep in here, because it causes more pain to think that this is my home, because we'll inevitably be moved along. And to prove it, I'll just point out that none of us got a lease agreement to stay here. Anyone? When you were born, did they give you a little paper to sign? No? Maybe it's in the car. You have it at home. There's no lease agreement, and there's no agreement anywhere that says that you get to stay for a certain amount of time in the world. So part of sambandhagyan, Krishna mentions in the Bhagavad Gita, he says, Abrahma Bhuvana Loka Punar Avartinojana Mamupetya Tukontiya Punar Janma Navidite. He just says that categorically the material world's not your home. You're going to get moved on. So if you adjust your awareness to that fact, it's a good starting point. And then he mentions in the Bhagavad Gita that we do have a relationship with the person who's created this whole thing, and who, as we heard earlier, is our friend, who's also the controller and owner of everything. So that's very good. And he encourages us to find that relationship again. And so we have these two aspects of sambandhagyan, hearing that the material world is naturally a rocky place. This is managing your expectations, because if you expect everything to go your way, you'll be unusually disturbed. But if you understand that you're in a shifting area that will not provide stability at any time, then you'll understand when things are changing that this is natural. And the second thing is to point your attention towards real home, due north, which means that you have to understand that there is a home place, there is a home button for you, and that is in your relationship with Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Every day, if one hears about this relationship and our non-relationship with the material world, it gives us a good stability in life because we're placing our heart in the right place, and that is in our trust in Krishna. We can develop that awareness through various exercises, as I mentioned earlier, noticing how the world's going on by the higher power of Krishna. And as we develop that awareness, Krishna mentions in the 9th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, in the very beginning, one might be aware that the universe is some kind of force that is supreme. In fact, if you want to look at the verse, it's Jnana Yagnina Chapyanye Yajanto Mamupasite Ekatvena Pritakvena Bahuda Vishvato Mukham. Let's just look at it. What do you think? Okay, three people, everyone else, close your eyes.
Yes.
Okay, could you put it up, please? Jnana Yagnina Chapyanye. Which verse number is it? 9. You can all guess it. If you guess right, if you don't know, you'll win something. We give away prizes here at ISV. 9:15, that's way too early, isn't it? Is 9:15? Okay. Here it is. Jnana Yagnina Chapyanya. You're going to be amazed when you read this. Are you prepared? I'm not convinced, but let's try. Jnana Yagnina Chapyanya Yajanto Mam Upasate. So this is talking about different kinds of people who worship Krishna, but they're in varying degrees of consciousness, as I mentioned, the opening of the flower of bhakti. Ekatvena pritakvena bahuda vishvatomukam. Let's look at the translation from this very interesting verse with very interesting language. Krishna says here, others who engage in sacrifice by the culture of knowledge worship the Supreme Lord as one without a second, as diverse in many and in the universal form. You're probably not better off than you were before you read the verse, right? So let's go into the purport. That'll help out a little bit. This will expand it. That's why the purport's important. Okay, here we go. This verse is the summary of the previous verses. The Lord tells Arjuna that those who are purely in Krishna consciousness and do not know anything other than Krishna are called Mahatma. Yet there are other persons who are not exactly in the position of Mahatma, but who worship Krishna also in different ways. Some of them have already been described as the distressed, the financially destitute, the inquisitive, and those who are engaged in the cultivation of knowledge. So this came earlier in the 7th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna says, Chaturvida bhajante mam jana sukritino arjuna arto jignasu artarti gyanicha bharatarshapa. He's talking about people who are actually connected to him in service in various ways or in awareness, as opposed to those, there are certain kinds of people he describes before that have an aversion to Krishna and avoid him at all costs. Have you ever met anybody like that? What did they do to avoid Krishna at all costs?
They say they're too busy.
They say they're too busy. Yep. Busy doing what? Working. Now that's one of the classes, because namam duskritina muda prapadyante naradama maya pritagyana asuram bhavamashrita. The people who have this averse attitude towards Krishna are described by Krishna. I'm really backing up here. But the fact is that he describes various categories of people. One of them, all they want to do is work, and they don't want to think about God at all. And they think work is God, and they won't stop working until they drop dead. That happens a lot. In Japan, it happens a lot. It's called kuroshi. People work so hard, they just drop dead. You're supposed to show up on your day off in Japan, corporations. Did you know that? Just to show your loyalty. So, be happy you're in Silicon Valley. So anyway, there are people who avoid Krishna altogether, who ignore him for in various ways. Another one's called Maya Pritigyana. They make up philosophies. They're the four horsemen of atheism in America. These professors who have written extensively of how there's no God, trying to prove that there is no supreme at all. And they go out of their way to propagate such knowledge. These are Maya Pritigyana and Asuram, people who are against God. Then there are people who actually approach the Lord, and they're mentioned as people who are either Chaturvida Bhajante Mam Jana Sukritana Arjuna. They're pious people, and they approach him because they need wealth. Oh, Lord, won't you buy me a color TV? Oh, Lord, won't you buy me Mercedes-Benz? My friends all drive Porsches. I must make amends. That was a poet from the 60s. You wouldn't know. So, but they're asking something from God. And then there are people who are in distress, and they turn to God because of that. And then there are people who are in knowledge, so they turn to God, or those who are inquisitive. These are various categories, and then now Krishna is referring back and he's saying, and here's some more people who are, they have some awareness of God. So here's who they are. But there are others who are still lower, and these are divided into three. One, he who worships himself as one with the Supreme Lord. Two, he who concocts some form of the Supreme Lord worships that. And three, he who accepts the universal form, the Vishwarup of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and worships that. Out of the above three, the lowest, those who worship themselves as the Supreme Lord, thinking themselves to be monist, are most predominant. Such people think themselves to be the Supreme Lord, and in this mentality, they worship themselves. So for your puja explanation today, the devotees who are doing that, you can imagine someone doing their own self-worship. Such people think themselves to be the Supreme Lord, and in this mentality they worship themselves. This is also a kind of God worship, for they can understand that they are not the material body, but are actually spiritual soul. At least such a sense is prominent. Generally, the impersonalists worship the Supreme Lord in this way. The second class includes the worshippers of the demigods, those who by imagination consider any form to be the form of the Supreme Lord. And the third class includes those who cannot conceive of anything beyond the manifestation of this material universe. Have you ever met anybody like that here in California? Like they get a new car and it's like, the universe gave me a car. Or I need a new car, I'm going to pray to the universe. This is them. They see like the whole universe. It's just out there, and they have some sense that there's a higher power there, that it's a mystical entity unto itself, the universe, and therefore they were, I need a new car. They consider the universe to be the supreme organism or entity and worship that. The universe is also a form of the Lord. So you see, Krishna is describing various stages of consciousness, as we've been discussing. And here, we find that some people are thinking of the universe itself as the ultimate form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And as one advances in consciousness, as the flower of bhakti and one's consciousness opens, which is synonymous with the awakening of bhakti, it changes from an it to a he. In other words, it becomes more personal. In fact, if you consider the awakening of gratitude, when you have gratitude, it means that you consider that there's some intelligence behind some gift you've been given. The more you appreciate the personal touch behind what's been given to you as a gift, the more gratitude there is. So the precursor to bhakti, as Shukadeva Goswami mentions in the second canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, is moving from just seeing the universe as an amorphous energy, or maybe a specific energy but not understanding its intelligence or the personality behind it, to thinking, yes, this is personal. Everything's personal. And this then awakens a sense of wanting to reciprocate with that personal, benevolent force that's behind the universe. Of course, oftentimes, because there's suffering in this world, there's a conundrum, because it's very hard to distinguish or to understand how there might be a personality who's benevolent and at the same time I'm undergoing suffering. And that's something to be worked out in the first stage called sambandhagyan, an understanding. It takes a little explanation to understand how it is in a universe that's completely just why bad things would happen to good people. But I'm opening a big subject matter there, but I just thought I'd footnote it in this discussion. So up to now we've mentioned, or I've mentioned in this monologue, several points. And before we move on to any other points or the next part of our program, which will include some chanting, we'll take some reflections, that is, if you'll accommodate, we'll take some reflections from you and from the listening audience at home. We know that there's some of you out there listening, so feel free to text in to the Facebook if you're watching there, or where else would they be watching? The number's there, and also they're watching Facebook, so they can write in the text block. If you have reflections or questions you want to write in to expand the conversation, go ahead. But that is only, unless the live studio audience beats you to it. So let's see if you have anything. Shraddha.
Maharaj, I was just thinking that when we are at work and we are working on a particular project, we are always thinking that, is this the project that is dear to the top management's heart, and am I working on the right thing? And then I was just thinking that something that you said, which points so much in favor of devotional service, that you said that Krishna rescues us from this material world through his various agents, and that is something the personified Vedas say, that that is something that gives him the highest pleasure. So we're always trying to please Krishna. That's the best way to please Krishna, is to try to get out of this material world.
That's a good point. Thank you for reiterating that. And they also say, to the personified Vedas, that it's his most glorious pastime, rescuing living entity from the material world. So you're part of a great rescue attempt that's underway here in the material world. And all we need do is to cooperate with the rescue attempt. Don't try to fight against those who are trying to pull you out here and airlift you from this disastrous situation. Okay, let's see if you have any more reflections. Yes, Prabhus? 1, 2. Starting with Sri Kumar Prabhu, who's looking very dapper today.
Thank you.
As usual.
Thank you for this reminding us of this connection, Prabhuji. I wanted to reflect on this fact that Krishna gave us a way of giving back to him, which you mentioned, yat karoshi yat asnashi yat juhoshi dadasi yat yat tapasvesi kaunte yat at kurushvama darpanam. Like, you can, whatever we do, I mean, he has given a mechanism by which we can easily give back to him.
Yes, it's not that Krishna's thinking of himself, because Prahlad Maharaj points out in his prayers to Lord Nrisimhadev that Krishna is Purnam. He is complete in himself, so he doesn't need any gift from anybody, or bribe, doesn't accept those. However, and this is a very important principle, if I'm able to grasp this principle and apply it in my life, it's a very practical matter also, then I'll move into the stream of abundance. In the material consciousness, I'm thinking that I have to hold back and save my resources. If you study economics, anyone take an economics class? Fun, right? First thing my textbook said was that economics is the science of is a science which is based on the law of scarcity. There are scarce resources, and they have to be apportioned, and this creates the law of supply and demand, and yada yada yada. It goes on from there. So the fact is that we live in a land of scarcity. I think that Monisha or someone quoted, correct me if I'm wrong, Jiva Jiva Sajivanam. Who quoted that today? You quoted it. Okay. So Avantika quoted a verse from the Srimad Bhagavatam, which says, Jivo Jiva Sajivanam. And in American parlance, it's a dog-eat-dog world. Or one living entity is food for another. There's a sense in which whatever I try to, by living here, I naturally have to take from others. It's the nature of the material world. So how to rise above that fray of scarcity and move into the flow of abundance? It's counterintuitive, because one might think that I have to pile up the numbers here in the material world in order to be happy. Isn't it true?
Yes.
You really do have to pump up your 401k. Do they have those anymore?
Yes.
It didn't all fail in 2007 or whatever it was. Okay, 401k, you have to pump it up. everything has to be in order in the material sense. But actually, counterintuitively, Krishna says, or Prahlad rather, says in the seventh canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, if you change the way you're thinking and you give to Krishna, then you actually become fulfilled because you're part and parcel of Krishna. And he gives this interesting example that if you decorate your face while you're looking in the mirror, what happens? Well, your reflection gets decorated too, right? Yeah. So Prahlad says, when you attend to Krishna's happiness, like we heard today, it's an elaborate and very beautiful seminar about how to worship Krishna. So if you take up any of the ways and means in which to satisfy Krishna, and you can do it through your work, or you can do it in many different ways through deity worship and so forth, then naturally, you'll become anointed. If you anoint Krishna, you'll be anointed because you're part and parcel of Krishna. This is the actual natural flow of abundance in this world. It's mentioned by Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita, isn't it? He says, Jagnartat karmano nyatra loko yam karma bandana tarartam karma kanteya mukta sangha samachara. Means if you think like this, how can I give to Krishna? How can I channel my energy towards Krishna? How can I support Krishna, cooperate with Krishna, give to Krishna? The more I do, the more I thrive. Counterintuitive, right?
Yeah.
Do they teach you that at Challenger? So this is what one of the actual formula for happiness in this world is to think, how can I give to Krishna? Now you're next.
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Hare Krishna.
So I liked your comment related to Bhoktaram Yajna Tapasam, where you mentioned that when we give a gift to someone, they do not know what to do with it, and they cannot appreciate it also sometimes. But Krishna, on the other hand, he has even whatever little we do in our devotion, he reciprocates in such a beautiful way. So it's a glaring change from what we experience in this material world. So yeah, I really like that point.
Yes, and this is again reinforced throughout the teachings of the Bhagavatam, which give present various ways and means to convince us of this relationship we have with Krishna and how and why we should be fully invested in it. Should fully invest ourselves in our relationship with Krishna. So, actually, in the nuance of that, it's said that the Vedas speak to us as a teacher. And then you have the Puranas and Itihasas that teach us like a friend. You know, someone sits down next to you and says, you know, here's what happens when you do this, so don't do it again, and be careful, and just friendly. And then the Kavyas teach us like or speak to us like a lover. And the Bhagavatam speaks us in all those ways to convince us of our real interest in life. And of course, we get a lot of the teachings from Krishna's devotees, and who would know better? And one of them, predominantly throughout the Bhagavatam, is Narada Muni. And just in terms of thinking, aligning our giving process in life, he says, Tyaktvasa dharmam charanam bhujam harer bhajana pakvota patetato yadi yatra kva babadram abudamushyakim kovarta apto bhajatam sudharmata. Which basically means that don't worry so much about getting your material life perfect, because it's not going to happen anyway. And even if you do, you'll be sorely disappointed when it all implodes at some point. And he says, if you try for bhakti, and you have to forego, to one degree or another, your so-called perfection in the material world, he said, you'll never lose. Because if you get bhakti, even a little bit, it's permanent. And it's the most worthwhile of all endeavors. So we get assurance throughout the Bhagavatam that don't worry. If you attend to Krishna, and that was actually the name of one of the Padatis that was written by Krishna Kshetra Maharaj, attending the form of Krishna. I always like that word, attending. Because if you attend to Krishna's interests, then yours will naturally be attended to automatically. However, if you try to attend to all your business, you won't be able to keep up. And it won't, and even if you do, even if you're some really big dude like Hiranyakashipu, something will go wrong. Ravana, something went wrong. Hiranyakashipu, and they tried harder than anybody. I mean, harder than anybody, in any CEO in Silicon Valley, they tried harder. And it didn't work out. So we can take, we can be convinced by that, because it's intuitive, it's logical also. And if we examine it and we listen to the Kavya, to the Bhagavatam speaking to us in various tones to convince us, we can actually be convinced. And then we'll experience it for ourselves that I'm living in the flow of abundance, because Krishna is unlimitedly opulent. And lifestyle with him is always happy. There were more over here. I saw you. Yeah.
Yeah. So according to one of your points in the lectures, I was just thinking of Patram Pushpam Phalam Toyam Yome Bhaktya Prayachati Tadam Bhakti Paritam Asnami Prayatmaha. So it says that a fruit, flower, water, and a leaf, I'll accept it. So, and another point was that ananyasintyanto mamejana paripasate desham mityabhyuktam yogakshema bhavami. If you just perform devotional service to me, I'll carry what you lack and preserve what you have. So Krishna says that if you just give me anything with devotion, I'll give what you need and what you need to come back to me. And
yeah, there's excellent quotations. On the first, he's giving a classic verse that all of you know from the Bhagavad Gita, which is a very sweet verse also, because it's Krishna personally asking us to offer something out of love. And yet, karoshi adashnashi, yach johosi dadasi yet. He's saying, well, give any old thing. Okay, so you're self-absorbed, you have all your own stuff, you're not... you don't really know what I like, but that's okay. He says, just give me what you have right now. Because when you start the process of giving to Krishna, then your life will change and you'll go into the flow of abundance. However, in this verse, that from our pundit circle over here, Patram Pushpam Palam Toyam, you'll notice that the verse has, Krishna's repeating the word bhaktya, bhaktya, bhaktya. He's saying, do it out of love. If you give something to Krishna out of love, then you naturally feel your connection with him, and it's an overwhelmingly satisfying feeling with such simple offerings. He's saying just a leaf. If you just offer a leaf to me, it means these things are available anywhere. You can go anywhere except maybe in the mountains. Once I went there, I could only find pine needles. But I offered them anyway because that's all I could get. But still, if you offer with devotion, then Krishna says, I'll reciprocate. And if Krishna reciprocates, then your life is sublime. And in the second verse, he's saying, yogakshemam vahamyaham. There's a lot said about this verse. Vahamyaham means that I'll personally do it. It's not that I'm doing it through my energies or I'll send some agent, but he said, I'll personally be there with you. If you take the risk of, so-called, of investing in our relationship, even though you don't know that much about it right now, and it seems maybe a little risky, if you take that risk because of good association, of hearing about Sambandha, our relationship with Krishna, and you say, I'm going to take the risk of investing in my relationship with Krishna, then Krishna says, the more you do that, ananyaschintayam, the more that becomes your main focus, he said, the more I'll take care of you. Of course, as I proved earlier, he's already taken care of us, even if we happen to take birth in the body of a crow or a mongoose. He's still going to provide us snakes and all kinds of other yummy stuff. But you know, when we come to this point of actually realizing that Krishna's a person and that I can give myself to him, then this is unusually auspicious. It's a day of celebration for any living entity who's sitting there and thinking, maybe chanting or reading or just observing how the world's working, and then gets this thought that, you know, maybe I will just give myself to Krishna. And then Krishna will immediately reciprocate within the heart and say, yeah, I've been telling you this for a long time, or others have been, and, you know, please do it. And once one does do that, then one will see the personal hand of Krishna in one's life. Yogakshemam mahamyaham. Pundit Circle, anything more? Okay. Yes, we have one from the internet.
So this is from Bhakta Alex Zarina, and he's just reflecting what you said about traveling means to be torched.
Travel means torture. Yes, we talked about that earlier, because we're all travelers. In fact, there's a very sweet verse in the Bhagavatam that says, coming to Krishna consciousness is like a traveler who's wearied by so much travel. Have you ever felt like that? Yes. I mean, it's like, I can't, you just feel morose. You haven't eaten proper meal prasadam for some time, and you know, you're just eating almonds out of a bag or something like that. You didn't get the seat you needed or whatever, and you know, it's just everything's going wrong, and next thing you know, you're morose, and then you come home and everything's the way. Travel means you get what you get, and home means you get what you want. And so coming home, the Bhagavatam says, this is what we're all looking for, to come home. And when we come to Krishna, this is our home. Home is where the heart is. And if that flower opens and we actually invest ourselves in our relationship with Krishna, even if externally we're in unfavorable circumstances, because the heart is home, we'll feel satisfied. This is proved in the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the story of Maharaj Chichaketu. What's my verse? Doesn't matter the external situation. Narayana Paraksarve Nukutashchana Bhibhyati Swarga Pavarga Narakeshu Apitulyarta Darshina. So a person who has developed this awareness of his or her relationship with Krishna, and it just even in the preliminary stage, means that you've decided that this is where I'm going to invest my attention, my relationship with Krishna. even in the beginning stages. Then Narayanat Parak Sarve, this means that one has decided that this is my goal in life. Nakutashana Pibyati Swarga Pavarga Narakishu, it's naming that it doesn't matter where you are now. You can be in heaven or you can be in a hell. And Apituliyarta, it's equal to such a person because you're not living externally anymore, you're only living here. This is where you're investing, and your relationship is apparent now because you've extended yourself to Krishna, you've made your decision, I'm going to revive my relationship with you, and then Krishna reciprocates, and then one feels satisfied and feels home in the heart, and it only gets better from there as the relationship deepens. And this is real home, the home button. Yes, Bali Mardan for the save. Bali definitely needs a mic.
Hare Krishna. So I would like to know more about, you mentioned the everything, likely surrender to the universe is giving me the car, or I am praying to the universe, because there is a group in, especially in Europe, they call So Am I, means So Am, means I am, I am. So I don't know what does mean, but they say everything is I. And they start on that, and then universe is also I, and many things is I. So if you ask how are you, means at the state what I am, that I am, so I am. So is it related, your meaning, in that way, or is it something different?
Sure sounds like it, doesn't it?
Yeah.
If you can't wrap your head around it very easily, and it's some amorphous kind of thing, that kind of falls in that category. You know, in Bhagavad philosophy, especially as explicated by Jiva Goswami and our other the leaders of our sampradaya, we get such a satisfying sense of our relationship with Krishna because they go out of their way to explain what it actually is. And regarding I, the consciousness of I am, as Radhika Raman Prabhu, you'll all remember, recently spoke how the only person who can actually use the word aham, in fact, the word aham, which you know in Sanskrit means I, is a name for Krishna. Anyone else who uses aham, it becomes a hunkar. Because Krishna is actually the real I, because everyone else is relative to Krishna. And we're dependent on our circumstances and relationships to exist. But Krishna is not. He's the only independent. Ishvara Parama Krishna Sakchirananda Vigraha Anadir Adir Govinda Sarvakarana Karanam. Krishna's independent in all ways, and not, he's the absolute truth. Everything's contained within him, and we're relative truths. We're fully dependent. So only Krishna can rightly say I. Otherwise, if you talking to somebody in the hallway here, we walk by and you hear them going, I was I and I, I. And in fact, if you read letters, you'll notice like seven columns of I did this, I did that. After a while, you start thinking, who is this person? But if Krishna says it, then it seems natural because he's the real aham or I. So many of these philosophies blur the lines between who is God and who we are. And it's natural because unless one has knowledge which is precise and coming from Krishna himself through a channel which is open and isn't distorting anything, then it's very easy to concoct things which obscure the actual philosophy which brings us to our relationship with Krishna.
Add one thing.
You may.
Recently, maybe a couple of years ago, I was doing the book distribution at San Jose State, and I met with a mid-age lady, and giving the book, she was, I think, faculty member, and the only reason she told me that I don't want to take Bhagavad Gita, because I know something about Bhagavad Gita. What do you know and why you don't want? He said, look, Krishna is always saying, I did this, I did this, I did this, I'm this, I'm that. So, is it not ego? well, her point is, okay, I said, well, Krishna has so many things unlimited, he just said five. So we have one and we say million times the same thing. So anyway, that's, but the I part, people get irritated, those who are envious of Krishna. So it's important, just wanted to add one.
So what are the chances of the good fortune of meeting Bali Mardan somewhere in Silicon Valley and getting a Bhagavad Gita from him and hearing some actual clear philosophy? And as we had a meeting this morning of North American Sankirtan leaders, about 35 people, I think, on the call, and I was just expressing a realization I think I spoke about last night before we left the picnic, and that is that nothing happens for the living entity in this material world to start him or her on the path of Krishna consciousness unless there's personal contact with the devotee. And that every contact that we have with the devotee is highly significant, because the devotee's real business is to give others Krishna consciousness. And once that process starts, then Krishna starts to help that person to advance in Krishna consciousness. So I was thinking of how you had spoken to one person, and it's quite natural and understandable that people we meet who are sincere about spiritual life will have various ideas, I would say distorted ideas, and I could defend that, but the fact is that they're not clear. They're not clear ideas. And it's very helpful to present as clear information as possible so that people can reestablish their relationship with Krishna. So thank you very, very much for tuning in to the people from all over the world on the internet. We felt your presence very acutely. And thank you for joining us here in the live studio audience of ISV, ISKCON Silicon Valley. And thank you very much. We'll see you at the next program, which is in about 30 seconds. Hare Krishna. Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman. Hey, Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman.